This is Jay Sekulow. After the tragic incident in Texas, what can we do?
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
26 people are dead, 20 are injured, 10 of those critically, and we have the age of the victims ranging from 18 months to 72 years old. A shooting at a church in Texas. And we are asking the question that I think is on everybody's mind is, what can we do? Because there is a, look, this is a horrific, tragic incident, crime, that took place in Texas. But what we need to figure out is, where do we go from here? What are the solutions? What are the things we should be looking at? Of course, we're praying for those that are injured and those that have lost loved ones. But this is where you've got to be able to merge prayer with action, in my view. And there's no way to explain this as anything other than what it is, which is evil. It's the individual that was involved in it, the perpetrator, who is Devin Kelly, is deceased. He was shot, either shot himself or was shot by a neighbor of the church who heard what was going on. But that's the question we're asking you is, what can we do now? We're taking your calls and comments on this at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110.
Listen, at a time when I mean, I see that the youngest victim here is the same age as my daughter. Yep. This is not, again, a normal, though those horrendous stories that we see, which are purely domestic violence, where maybe there is a domestic situation, a family suffers a significant loss of life, like three or four individuals. While this has a tie to the domestic of an ex-mother-in-law and ex-wife,
right?
This shooter did not just target the ex-mother-in-law and the ex-wife, as horrible as that would be. That's violence that we can kind of, I think, deal with regular law enforcement in the United States of America. It's the kind of crime we see. These mass shootings where some of the people there, I mean, most of the people at this small church had nothing to do personally with this individual who came, if he came after. I think that we have to all be a lot more concerned about if you receive a text message, as was reported here, from someone that sounds threatening, report it to law enforcement, and they'll be there. And you're not burdening law enforcement by telling them or annoying people by telling them. They want to know that information before an incident occurs.
You know, Logan, you had said this earlier. We were talking about it. It's one of the movie shootings, one of these, that parents go into these situations now with their kids, and you're looking at where the exits are, what is the security like. And this is unfortunately becoming all too common, and there's nothing common about this. This is the largest church shooting in U.S. history, but the fact of the matter is that this is puts everybody on edge.
Oh, I mean, on edge is an understatement. I think we're all dealing with this as parents, as just people. Whenever you go anywhere in public, I mean, I saw a lot of posts, nowhere is safe, nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of the issue we have now. It's not even an incident like where there's a motive that makes, at least not, doesn't make sense.
But it's an ideological base. Like,
okay, well, that's horrible. It's a terrorist attack. These things happen. We are seeing people that are just done with how to live their life, and they don't even know how to move on.
No,
I think that's the problem. Is none of us, there's no clear-cut solution to things like this, because both sides are going to have their points, but there's really no side.
Seeing this increase in violence. This is not ISIS terrorism, obviously. This is something we're happening, a problem domestically in our own country, like the mass school shootings in that line of more of the attack. And it's, again, I think we have a strategy on how to defeat one of the terrorists. What is a strategy that you could put together to target? I'm not talking about all violent crime, because that would be impossible for law enforcement.
Yep.
But I'm talking about mass shootings where there may be indicators. You can't force someone to tell law enforcement about a text message they got. You can't let law enforcement see everybody's text messages.
Right.
But I think everybody's got to be vigilant, or else, if we don't come to this solution, this will be bad for the church. This is, in a sense, an attack on the church, because how many people thought, I mean, I sure did. I'm not going to any large groups settings after this. You know, you see that, and it hurts. It hurts.
Yeah. Now, this is, look, this is what this is. Horrible. We'll take your calls when we come back from the break.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. Taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Obviously, this horrific attack on this church in Texas, leaving 26 people killed, 20 injured. Basically, everybody inside that church was almost killed or injured. I mean, almost everybody inside that church. The individual involved, his name is Devin Patrick Kelly. He was in the United States Air Force and was court-martialed. I brought into the conversation our senior military analyst, who's also a retired colonel in the United States Army and a retired chaplain in the United States Army, Colonel Wes Smith. So, Colonel Smith, let me ask you this question. This Texas shooter was discharged from the Air Force for assaulting his spouse. People, just so people understand what the military justice system and how it works and what that, because part of it, and then this was supposedly his ex-wife's mother-in-law went to this church. But what goes on in the court-martial? What, to get a year in confinement, what does that mean?
Right. I served on the Family Advocacy Council, which deals with domestic violence at Fort Lewis, Washington. And in the military, they take it extremely seriously. There is no such thing as a minor, you know, incident of domestic violence. But even what you might perceive as a minor one, if you are convicted of that and brought before a council, you are forbidden from then on in your military career from carrying a weapon, even your military weapon. So domestic violence in the military is always career ending. It will end your career. This case is unusual because in all of my experiences over 26 years dealing with domestic violence in the military, for someone to be sentenced to 12 months confinement in a military jail for domestic violence, it had to be particularly heinous and violent. It was against not only his spouse at the time, but against his child.
Yeah, it said
that
he was
tells you about him.
Yeah, it tells you a lot
attacking
about him.
A
yeah,
kid.
So he got a bad conduct discharge after he was released from 12 months confinement.
Well, he attacked at the church killing, shooting. He attacked 17 months old to 72 years old. He was court-martialed in 2012 for assaulting his wife and child. Later received a bad conduct discharge from the Air Force in addition to confinement for 12 months and was reduced in rank. I mean, I raise this question, which I know is going to create a lot of stir right now, but if he served 12 months, was in confinement, was discharged for violence, how did he get a gun?
Well, we looked at that with Curtis, one of our lawyers here, and in Texas, it's much easier to get a gun.
Even with a record?
Even with, with a long gun. I think it's more strict with handguns, but it appears that with a long gun, you know, the background check perhaps is either not there or not very strict. And in the military, you know, the question I have was, did the Air Force communicate with civilian authorities about his domestic violence conviction? And that's unclear as well.
Yeah, it's unclear. I mean, they said they put his name through the check. So if you were a gun store owner and you put his name through the checks, it appears that today, if you would have done that, 2 days ago, he would have cleared through. mm-hmm. which means there was some disconnect between what happened with the military court of justice, the court martial. So I think because that's outside the gun control debate and what is and the gun issue, to me, I think that you can look at this should not be about whether you support the Second Amendment or not and no. what side of the gun. You can look at why.
This individual got
martial info. If he did purchase, we don't know yet if he tried if he purchased this through a store. But if he did, why it would have not shown up as someone who should not be purchasing weapons? So well, we got a little feedback going now.
And he applied for a concealed carry permit in the state of Texas and was denied the concealed carry permit, which seems to indicate there was something on his application or in his record that they did pick up on because they denied the concealed carry permit.
What I don't understand is how law enforcement didn't, again, under the
back. You could buy a gun, let me just say, you could buy a gun in Texas from an individual. They don't have to, you know, like the guns.
I know.
The loophole. So that could
but
be
it
the
was
way.
The, look, the guy was stopped. The guy was stopped because somebody else had a gun. The neighbor had a gun. So, I mean, you know, that's how, and this guy could have been on an additional killing spree for all we knew. But that part of it, again, that's not getting into the gun debate. I'm just telling you, that's the issue.
Yeah, it was interesting, though. The Texas Attorney General made the gun debate kind of right at the center by saying, when he was asked, how do you prevent this? His immediate response to the Attorney General of Texas was, we need more good armed citizens. And I think, you know, in Texas, that may not work. But I know a lot of our listeners, they live in states where the gun laws are much stricter. That's not going to really help them. That's going to be a lot tougher for them to comply with. And in fact, I think in a lot of states, you're not allowed to have a weapon in a house of worship.
That's true in some states.
Yeah, I mean, they actually have even states that allow open carry and things like that. They're specific, like bars, mm-hmm. houses of worship, and like
political events. Gatherings. Yeah,
right. I mean, so I think this was a small church. It's not going to have the kind of resources to put two or three off-duty police officers. I think we know from we all know who's listening to this broadcast. If you attend a large church or drive by one in the morning and see the parking, it's done by police who are armed. And so that certainly is a preventative measure. It makes someone think twice before trying to – and it likely prevents an attack that this large. But I just think we need this discussion.
Yeah.
And we need it on the conservative side. Or else the other option is very strict gun control law. So I think that's why conservatives
better
take this. Which
hasn't traditionally worked. I mean, that's
no, it hasn't. Yeah. But it will be the knee-jerk reaction.
But I think
you've
got to have a discussion about some of this. And I think it's the discussion is warranted and should take place.
Yeah, right. Even if you come up with an answer that's not necessarily going to be popular with half of the population, I think you got to have this discussion. The conversation has to occur. If it doesn't occur, you're going to lead to more
restrictions on Second Amendment rights.
I mean, yes, if you don't have an honest that's discussion about these issues, I think that's right. All right, let's do this. Let's start that conversation at 1-800-684-3110.
I mean, think about like all the other topics we've talked about, whether it's immigration reform or tax reform. You can't just say, we're just not going to talk about it.
Right.
No. At some point, you do have to sit down to talk about it, whether you're on either side of the debate, whether you're the person that says there should be restrictions on everything or there should be
state.
The Wild West. Right. You have to be able to have a discussion or no one's going to get anywhere. And this argument, this conversation is just going to keep coming because if there's no solutions, not even an attempt to a solution, I think that's sort of one of the problems we have right now.
Well, you can't put your head in, head in the sand as if there's not a mental health issue component, Wes, to all of this.
Absolutely. And the other thing, I think the lesson that's coming out of this, and it's an unfortunate lesson that we have to learn, and that is whenever you go to any public place, including the sanctuary of a church, you need to have some security consciousness about you.
Awareness.
What happened in Las Vegas at a concert? What happened yesterday at a worship service? I mean, for me, because I'm prior military and I've had counterterrorism training and I'm a very protective father and grandfather, but whenever I go to public gatherings with my children and grandchildren, I actually look around at exits and I talk to my children.
Oh, yeah.
And we always set up in a large place where we're going to meet up if we get separated. That kind of security consciousness, Jay, unfortunately, is going to be something that every American will have to look at.
In my own life, it's like you think, do you want, I mean, and I know a lot of our listeners have done this, have said, okay, I'm just going to go, you know, kind of into the woods, 10 acres and put a big fence around, you know, if they can, if they live in a more rural area. And I know a lot of our listeners have decided that, made that decision. But everybody can't do that.
Most people can't.
And most people can't.
And that doesn't necessarily solve the problem.
And it feels like this is more of a suburban.
Yeah.
This was not really us. This was a suburban town.
This
a small
is a very
suburban
rural town.
Yeah, there was someone who retweeted. It's like, this is like a possession upon.
Yes, this
right
is something
that
happened.
It's like people all of a sudden have had, there's been something that snapped and all of a sudden this is happening. Not like we haven't had mass shootings in for decades, but all of a sudden this continual stream of attack has just gotten to the point where people are at a breaking point.
Let's take a call here.
Yeah. Let's go to Will in California online too.
Hey, Will, go ahead.
Good job, everybody. I think the loophole is that we need to have a system for anybody who buys parts online before they could purchase it. They need to know who is this person. And I think that's the only way we could stop all this nonsense.
Well, I'm not sure that stops it because there'll be black markets on that. There'll be offline markets. I mean, it's not. I think this is a conversation that we have to have. I think not having this conversation, like Logan said, is a big mistake. You have to have this conversation. I'm just not convinced that you're going to be able to. I don't know that there's an easy fix to any of this.
No, I think it's a two-prong. You do need to look at like why he was denied a concealed carry permit, but it was able to purchase this weapon.
Unless
it was a person-to-person purchase. And I know, Dad, you personally think that those are questionable legally.
I think you should have mandatory background checks, even person-to-person.
Yeah.
I know that may not be popular with a lot of our listeners, but I do, because this was the perfect
example. Well, I think there's a lot. Know. Yeah. And I think that those are all things you put on the table.
My goodness, you have to have a background check to get a driver's license.
You have to have a driver's license to get Sudafed.
Right.
You know, and they track how much Sudafed you buy at the store. So if we do all of that, we've given up that much because of the drug. And there's a huge drug problem, in many communities. Yeah. So we give up certain eases.
But this is not an attack on the Second Amendment, I think, that there's a loophole with the where you can just private to private. You still should have some kind of – that's my view. Wes, go ahead.
I agree. I'm a big supporter of the Second Amendment. I have a concealed carry permit, and I use it. And yet I think most gun owners would be supportive of universal background checks, that no one should buy a gun, as you said, from an individual or at a gun show or at a gun shop without having a background check.
Well, this guy was was known to be not stable.
He would not have passed any of those tests.
He wouldn't have passed the test.
Easily.
That doesn't mean, by the way, he couldn't have gotten a gun.
But
don't make it so easy is what I'm saying context.
Or so cheap. Because the way to get the gun on the black market becomes very expensive, cost prohibitive for most non-criminal enterprises,
at least put the walls up to make it a little harder.
Yeah. All right.
It's not going to affect anybody who's listening right now who's an honorable person who goes to their gun store and can buy a gun because they pass the check easily.
Right.
All right. We're going to take a break. People. When we come back, we're going to talk to a pastor who was just in Texas and just closed the prayer for the press conference that just took place. He's going to be joining us after the break. So you're going to want to stay tuned to that. We'll take more of your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Sad day in America. Inside the sanctuary of a church. Killing 17-year-olds, 72-year-olds. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. 877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
Well, the statistics are horrible. It seems like we're doing this every week. 26 killed and 20 wounded, ages from 17 to 72, including the pastor's 14-year-old daughter was killed in a small church in Texas outside of San Antonio. The individual that has been alleged to have done this, who's now dead, Devin Patrick Kelly, served in the Air Force, was court-martialed for assaulting his wife and child, and was discharged in 2014. His mother-in-law, former mother-in-law, or maybe current mother-in-law, was a member of the church. So, but he took out his angst at the entire congregation in killing killed 26 people. 10, by the way, are also in serious critical condition. So we're expecting that to rise. So this is a horrific situation. We're joined on the phone right now by Pastor Demas Silberios, who gave the prayer at the press conference that just closed. Pastor, thank you for being with us. Can you describe kind of what's going on right now and what you've been telling the folks that have been subject to this horrific act?
Yeah, I've been ministering to the pastor and their family. You know, I have a book called Street God, and I just believe we got to take Jesus everywhere this happens. And they feel very solid about Jesus and in their faith. We're meeting right now at an off-site location with the rest of the survivors. And, you know, it's a very sobering place. But my focus is to keep their eyes on Christ and remind them that our Savior went through the same brutal death, unfortunately, like, you know, the premature death that they're dealing with today.
Pastor, you are out of New York. Tell us why you went down to Texas. I mean, obviously, we know why you went there. You're the president of Concerts of Prayer in New York City. Why did you go down?
I just believe in John 13:35, where the Bible clearly says that people will know that we're his disciples by our love one for another. And I believe love is an action word. So last night, as soon as I heard the news, I had to stow on clothes. They drove me to the airport as fast as we could, booking flights and no hotels, everything by faith, to be down here so that we could bring comfort to these leaders, because often, I mean, I've been to every church shooting. There's been Tennessee, the Emmanuel 9 shooting in Charleston. Yep. And the beautiful thing is forgiveness is the consistent theme. And these people that are martyrs, it's like God has chosen these locations of people deeply are mature in their faith and love Jesus.
Have you had a chance to talk to the pastor of the church?
Yes, I've just talked to him 1 minute before walking in this car. And he is a great shepherd. He's holding himself together as best as he can. I mean, he lost his 14-year-old daughter. And I mean, so they're in the middle of mourning at the same time of serving a hurting church.
He, the church, of course, is First Baptist of Sutherland Springs. Pastor, it's a small church, and it looks like, based on what took place, that almost everybody there was either wounded or killed by this guy.
I mean, I would almost say, just imagine a room that's the size of two classrooms, and a guy walks in with an assault rifle. I mean, that is the scene. That's why 40 or more were shot. And that's why, you know, 26 passed away. You know, we're trying to help this one woman named Sarah. She has eight funerals to do for her family. Eight of her family members were killed. So please, listeners, keep Sarah in your prayers. I mean, resources seem to be coming through, but you know how it goes.
Is there a website where people can support the church through this and to help with some of these costs? Do you know, Pastor, if there's a website?
I mean, they can donate if they would like to Concerts of Prayer, Greater New York. We funnel the money directly to the pastor, and that's where we're working with him one-on-one to really cover those eight funerals. So that's copgny.org. That's gny.org.
All right, very good. We will make sure that's up.
Can I ask the pastor one more question? Sure. Pastor, because along with your ministry, you pastor a church in a large city, New York City, the largest city in the country. When this happens, I mean, the security concerns, I think a lot of our listeners, you know, they attend church regularly, large events regularly. They are concerned now, you know, should more be done? But this was, again, I think to explain to people, what you just explained is not the kind of place, not the kind of church that would have four or five police doing parking outside. I mean, it's more about the, again, probably individuals taking on that role.
Yeah, you know, it's the ongoing struggle. You know, do we bear arms in church? Do we put our swords away like Peter? Do we, you know, I mean, churches are always going to be soft targets. It's like that all around the world. Now this problem is hitting the U.S. That's the only difference.
I mean, I think the way that you're explaining it, it's the way I thought about it at first almost. I don't use these words lightly, but I think the pastor saying it, I think it reinforces it, is that we forget that when we talk about the persecuted church in different parts of the world, there's a reason why there's this, it feels like sometimes there's a target on Christians, even when they are a minority. And for the most part, in the United States, where we've seen church violence been very targeted at individual-to-individual violence and not this kind of mass way, we did see the racially motivated in South Carolina. But the idea that you can have a church, as Logan said, like, as the world is it gone evil? Well, we know people are evil. And that we can be face persecution here, real. Like you call these folks, they were worshiping in church. They are martyrs. They died worshiping Christ.
You have a large Christian audience. Every last person, I mean, I interviewed every last person in Charleston, South Carolina, the survivors, and they said you could see a demonic presence on Dylan Roof. When I was in Tennessee, they have shared with me, you saw the darkness of the eyes, the same way people saw the killers in Rwanda. We're fighting a spiritual battle. This is a demon-possessed man filled with hatred. He told his friends, I hate religious people. That kind of heart is a dark heart, and this is a war and a strike against God's people.
We appreciate, Pastor, first of all, thank you for your ministry and for going down and ministering to the people in South Texas. Demas Salbarius has got a great work up in New York, but right now he's doing that ministry in Texas, and we appreciate you coming on and ministering to the people at First Baptist Sutherland Springs. Thank you so much, Pastor. All right, we've got a lot more ahead. When we come back from the break, we'll be taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. There's another half hour of the broadcast. Logan will let you know how you can get in touch with us.
That's right. If you don't get the full hour of JSecular Live on your local station, you can find us broadcasting live right now on aclj.org. Social media, Facebook, Periscope, Twitter. Just search for JSecular at JSecular. You'll find us broadcasting there. You can also get your calls in at 1-800-684-3110. I know a lot of people have been holding for a while. We'll get to your calls coming up in the next 30 minutes. You can also get your comments in online. We take some of those during the break. If we do lose you here and you have to get back to something else, you can find us archived later on the ACLJ app, available in the App Store for iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, and also the Roku Channel Store. You can also subscribe to the JSecular Live podcast, but all of that can be found at aclj.org.
All right, we'll be back, as Logan said, with more of your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110 as we explore the tragedy that took place in Sutherland, Texas, and we'll have more analysis when we come back from the break.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
desirable. Yep. We don't know. Yep.
So here's what we've got. A horrific shooting again, now this time in a church in Texas. The shooter, Devin Patrick Kelly, served in the United States Air Force, was court-martialed for assaulting his wife and child. We'll talk about that in a moment. 26 people are dead, 20 injured, 10 of those critically. They expect the death toll to rise. We just had on Pastor Demas Salvarius, who is from New York, but went down to minister to the people in Texas, including that pastor and his family. He lost his 14-year-old daughter. The age is it's nauseating when you have to even say this, to tell you the truth. It really is. 17 months old to 72-year-olds killed. I asked the question because I think this conversation has to take place, and that is the question of how did a guy that got court-martialed in the United States Air Force, served 12 months in jail in the Air Force, how did he legally obtain a weapon? I mean, why is that? I think that's a conversation we have to have. How did that individual legally obtain a weapon? Now, at the same time, the person that shot the criminal here, that shot Devin Patrick Kelly, did have a weapon and was able to shoot the guy. So I'm not making some, you know, pronouncement on the Second Amendment here. But I asked that question. Let me go to Wes Smith, Colonel from the United States Army, retired chaplain. You were on the Family Advocacy Council. Mm-hmm. You've dealt with this in the military. What happened to this individual, Devin Patrick Kelly, that would have ended up him in jail for 12 months in a military prison?
It would have to have been a particularly violent, undeniable act of domestic violence, more than likely where there were physical injuries to the wife and to his child. And like I said, it's unusual for someone to be sentenced to confinement for that long unless it was extremely violent and extremely serious. And this guy, you know, is obviously not a good man, and certainly probably is not a well man mentally. But, you know, sometimes we make the distinction. We want to say it's either mental illness or it's evil. It can be both. And I think this is pure black evil, you know, speaking from a religious point of view as a Christian. He may have been mentally ill indeed, but this is immoral. It is evil. It is an ungodly act that he committed in the church.
Well, you said there's this sense. I mean, Logan, you said this too. There's a sense of that this is we're going through this demonic aspect. I mean, I'm not trying to over-spiritualize anything, it's dark.
It's a season that we're all, you know, living through, and you brought up just like the movie theaters. Well, this is beyond that at this point. I mean, when you go and you sit down, the odds are in your favor. That's a weird part where your mind has to go, well, I'm going to leave my house because the odds are in my favor that nothing is going to go wrong. That is an odd place to live in society where you have to even mentally rationalize that part of your head saying, most likely everything will be fine, but if it doesn't, what am I going to do? That is a weird part we are as a country, as a world, with no clear-cut solutions. You know, we see a lot of people online. There's a lot of people with a lot of points of views from the, essentially, we do nothing, we don't have this conversation, to all the way to the other extreme. You know, and I feel like that this is, we're at a breaking point
in society. You have to have a conversation.
Where the conversation has to happen. We need to stop being babies about it and sit down and talk. And if we don't figure something out, that's just going to continue to happen. And people are going to continually just throw out their, like you said, prayer without action. Just tweets that say, you know, sorry. How many times are we going to be able to do that, you know, until eventually we just have to move on almost as a society and just deal with it? This is the new norm. That this is not unlike living in a state in the Middle East where stuff just happens. And you have to just realize there's a good chance when you walk out the door that you have to have a plan.
And I mean, I would just at an event, that's why I was off radio, and right outside Chicago, about 700 people. Those kind of events, and I thank, by the way, the organizers, Illinois Right to Life and Illinois Right to Life Action, for having me. It was a great event to be with you all there. We had a lot of listeners there. But, you know, those kind of events are very American in the sense that we come together in large groups without that kind of fear. I think that's why we want the discussions, because we want to, as much as possible in the modern world, have some semblance of being able to come together in large groups of like-minded people like church or Illinois Right to Life without this fear of a mass event happening in random places. You know, these are not target cities for terrorism. These are a small town.
This was a domestic matter that became a mass killing.
Right.
All right, we'll take your calls when we come back from the break.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Well, we want to have the conversation, and I know that there's some that are saying, well, maybe we shouldn't have the conversation, but the fact is you got to have this conversation. I ask the question because I'm a lawyer that's been practicing law for 39 years or 37 years, and here's my question. How is a guy that's discharged from the United States Air Force dishonorably, who spent 12 months in jail at the military because of violence against his wife and child, how is he legally able to acquire a handgun or a rifle, assault rifle here? I mean, how is that possible? Again, it's not an attack on the Second Amendment. It's just, how did that happen? Now, I want to be able to discuss it. I think we need to have the conversation. I have been one, and I know I'll get criticism for this, but I've been one that's been concerned about what they call the gun show loophole, where you
right.
Citizen to citizen, you can sell it, no background checks, nothing. I just think that's problematic. I mean, you got to go through all kind of testing to get a driver's license. I mean, it to me is, I've always had an issue with that. But that's me, and that's the position that I have. We want to hear from you, and we are taking calls. Go ahead.
It does appear from news reports now that our producers got is that this was not that kind of purchase. That somehow he was able to, as you said, this big question of how could he, if as long as it was post the discharge, post being found guilty, that should have been in the database. Probably was the reason why he was denied a concealed carry permit. Was the database not quick enough when he was released? Does it take too long to update that database? Did he know that was the time window? Because he bought weapons in two states, right? Correct. Well, Colorado, where he lived, and Texas, and in Texas where this event occurred. And it appears that he bought those from gun stores who would have put his name through the registration process to make sure nothing came back. It complies with what we've been told in these news conferences as of today, that if you ran his name before this event occurred at a gun store, you would not have found information in the criminal database.
Because of it was a military prosecution?
We don't know. But somehow they needed not to give him a concealed permit. Now, that could have been I've done a concealed permit class in Virginia. That could have been behavioral at the class.
Could have been.
It could have been that he was
putting incorrect information
on
the application, could have been. But yeah, to answer your question, Jay, I don't know, because in my experience, whenever we had a person come before us who was guilty of domestic violence, we notified the civilian authorities in the county where the installation was. But I don't know if that's uniform or not.
Yeah.
Obviously, either he bought these weapons before this domestic violence incident, or there is a huge glitch somewhere in the system.
Well, that's why I want to have the conversation. All right, let's go ahead and take some phone calls, Logan.
All right, let's do it. Let's go to Cody, who is calling on line one, Springfield, Missouri.
Hi, Cody. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Cody. Nice to talk to you guys.
Yes, sir.
But I have a an idea of what should happen. You know how this guy, he said he's got his gun. Well, he's going to get a gun regardless of what laws we have in place. That's my thing. And then, but what type of preventative measures can we take from this situation happening again in the local
Well, here's the problem. A small church in South Texas doesn't have the resources to have armed security necessarily at their church doors. Do you need them? Probably the answer to that is yes. Should have this guy, you know, you say, you know, he could have gotten a gun. Yes, there are ways to get weapons at that, even if you're not, I'm sure there's an illegal market for it, but that's not so easy.
Yeah, it's not like we shouldn't put up those walls, though, attempt.
And what we're now getting is that, and then, I mean, Cody, I understand your point of view. There is those gun show loopholes, which is really not the gun show sellers. I want to make that clear. They call it that, but it's people in parking lots selling, you know, person to person sales, like a used car sale. Even
I've seen it firsthand.
Yeah,
it is
so
pretty, it's pretty bizarre to watch.
Yeah, it's different, but it is legal in many places. I mean, and the question here is how, Cody, did he purchase all four of these law enforcement sound for us? The four between 2014 and 2017, after he was court-martialed in 2012 and put in jail for 12 yep. for a year, how did he get to go to gun stores and his name was not rejected by the database? He had what was the equivalent of a felony. Maybe that is the issue that we need to look at, is that if you serve 12 months in military prison, you should be treated that same way. You should lose do you lose the right to vote? I don't know. I am not an expert in the military, because you do if you serve a regular felony.
Right, exactly.
You lose a whole host of rights even once you are fully released. You know, you have to notify employers.
You usually can't have, if you've got a felony, you usually can't purchase weapons.
No, you right. Exactly. Yeah, universally you cannot.
Yeah.
You cannot vote. I mean, you lose your right, a lot of rights.
But can you not purchase a weapon? But does that stop? How would the seller at a private seller to
not.
Another private seller
they
know?
Not.
They would not know. That is where this issue, I think, is a legitimate issue that has to be discussed.
But he didn't even have to go to that step. And so, I mean, there was obviously a breakdown in the walls that we already have. And that's something that we should be able to seal up very quickly. And it seems to me, the more I keep thinking military versus civilian court,
maybe there's
a disconnect there because of the rights.
We need to find that out. All right, let's take another call, Logan.
All right, continuing on. Let's go to Rob in Chicago. Thanks for holding, Rob.
Hey, Rob, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure.
That's exactly, listening to your conversation, I think that there is a disconnect with the military agencies. I think the military man you have there, I think he mentioned it.
Wes, yeah.
We have in Illinois, I'm former law enforcement,
yes,
and
sir.
Whenever we would run somebody, you know, it would come back in the NCIC system, whether or not they had any type of you know, criminal history and whatnot. So I'm not sure if that's an easy fix. I mean, if that's something that is not happening, that's an easy fix. So that's, you know, as far as the,
you're a former law enforcement. What do you think should be done on things like this? Go ahead.
Number one is fix up these small loopholes that we have, you know, because we're dealing with a right, not a privilege. So the DL, the driver's license thing, is kind of a little bit different, but we can use that as a model in the sense that, you know, not everybody has a commercial driver's license. They have most people have a regular driver's license, so you can't get assault rifles or whatever unless you have an upper level version of a. I think most people would agree with that. I'm an RA guy and that kind of thing. The other thing is, how do we stop this type of thing? I don't think that we are. I mean, when we look at we're talking about a window of carnage here. You can do as much preventative medicine as you can to a point, but at some point, I think we need to look to Luke 22:36, where Jesus told people, you know what, sell your cloak and buy a sword. And I think that we are responsible in these types of incidences to protect our families. And
well, you know, you say that, and the fact of the matter is that neighbor of theirs had a weapon and was able to at least wound the guy to stop the assault. And he ultimately looks like he killed himself, but he was shot by the neighbor who had a weapon that was able to bring this guy down.
I'll say, you know, Rob knows from Chicago, famous, you know, Supreme Court case out of Chicago, Illinois, made it easier to purchase a handgun for personal protection, but not conceal it. Mm-hmm. I mean, not walk around the city concealing it. So I think that, Rob, you also understand as former law enforcement, there are a lot of people who live in urban situations where it is illegal for them to carry a there is no method for them to have a concealed permit. Yep. And so they've got to rely on the authorities, on their church officials to put those authorities in place. Washington, D.C. is an example. New York's an example. I believe Chicago is part of that example. And Los Angeles would be another one.
Let's take another call.
All right, let's take a call before the break. Let's go to David in El Paso, Texas, on line 5.
Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. You're on the air, sir.
Nice to talk to you guys. Yep. Appreciate everything you do.
Thanks.
I want to say, first of all, my heart goes out to all those people at the church. It's an evil thing, and we just hate to hear that kind of thing. I had two comments, Jay. I'm a concealed handgun licensee in Texas and have been for several years. And you need to know that these gun shows, you know, those are, for the most part, gun dealers who are there. And if you buy a gun at a gun show, you still have to have a background check.
Yes, from a dealer you do.
From a dealer you do.
But not from the parking lot sale.
Well, if you're in the parking lot, yeah, that's true. Those are individual sales. I don't know if there's anything you could ever be able to do about that.
I know, actually. But I think it's something, again,
well, you could make them illegal.
You could at least not make it something that you should be able to do legally.
You could say that, you know, if you want to do a sale, you've got to, or you could actually keep it legal by saying that you've got to use a, you know, that the gun store's got to broker it for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That the gun store, by their right, because they have to get licenses. So part of their license is that for people, they will run a background test. I don't think you have to have it on your phone because that gives too many privacy problems. I don't want everybody running background, you know, on anybody else. So I think that gun stores could actually provide that service free as part of their licensing, because they have a license to sell. You don't have a right to have a gun store. You have a Second Amendment right to have the weapon, but the store has to go through lots of licensing.
Yep.
And I think that you could still have the person-to-person sell at whatever price you want. And part of that licensing could be that the gun store will run, which costs them nothing. Which is provided by the federal government, a quick background check, which usually I think takes minutes.
Right.
I think
it's exactly. Look, here's what we're saying. We're saying the conversation has to take place. We don't have the, no one on this panel has the solution to what this is, and this is evil. That's what it is. And I don't, you know, I know people are bemoaning and saying, oh, you know, prayer's not enough. Well, prayer's really important for those families in Texas right now. Let me tell you that, okay?
Absolutely.
Really important. So I'd encourage you to be praying for those folks in Texas and for those families that lost their 17-month-old baby or the pastor's daughter, 14 years old, killed at a church service. So you know what? Those are belittling prayer. I don't belittle prayer. Pray for those in Texas. Pray for those families. Pray for those that are in the hospital fighting for their lives, 10 in critical condition right now. I mean, this is you know, people belittling prayer. Don't belittle prayer. We'll be back with your calls.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. 989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. We want to have the conversation. Now, some of you don't want to have the conversation. It's a free country. You don't have to have it. But I think we have to have the conversation of what took place in Texas. What can we do about it? Where are there loopholes that are problematic? Why was this? And I'm going to go to Wes Smith on this. We'll go right to the phones. Colonel in the United States Army, chaplain, dealt with family advocacy issues and family disruption issues. This guy was basically court-martialed and sentenced.
Yes, he was. 12 months in confinement. That is very, very unusual and very serious, which points to the seriousness of the act that he committed against his wife and his child. And there is a glitch somewhere, Jay. There has to be. And I think if nothing else, what will come out of this, the Department of Defense will look at this and make sure that when people are brought before the Uniform Code of Military Justice for this kind of crime, that that is put into the database in the civilian world of the United States, too, because somehow or another that did not happen in this case. And the Department of Defense, that's an easy fix for them.
And I said this, and I want to be fair on this. I mean, the guy, the neighbor of the guy that lived next to the church was able to use his weapon legally under the Second Amendment to take this guy down, at least wound him enough that he stopped his killing spree. So, you know, we're not saying ban weapons. I mean, that's not what we're saying here. But if there is an obvious problem, we need to look at it. Let's go right back to the phones.
All right, let's go to Christian in Iowa on line two.
Hey, Christian, go ahead.
Thanks for holding.
Hey, guys. Hearing the conversation, I appreciate the open dialogue regarding all of this. However, I keep hearing a lot of stuff that's a lot of speculation because we don't necessarily know all the facts.
Right.
And there's a lot of opinions, you know, going out, obviously. My opinion is always, you know, we've got the Constitution, we've got the Second Amendment. It's loud and clear, shall not be infringed. I'm a concealed weapons holder. When I go to church, you know, I don't care what the policy is. I'm going to conceal carry because if something does happen, I don't want to be the person hiding under a chair. I want to be the person that can at least act. Might lose my life, but I might also save a life.
Well, I don't think it's about you might lose your life in that situation if you were the person who was able to respond to an actual attack. I think it's that I don't know the law in Iowa.
Right.
But in many states, you cannot bring a gun legally. And I don't think, you know, as lawyers, as Christians, right. I'm not going to tell people, break current laws. Now, could you debate? Yes, that's what we're doing now. Current laws to Texas may allow that concealed. Iowa might. I'm not saying you're doing something illegal, Christian. I think what your point is that if you're the person or individual that has to engage a shooter, you're willing to do that to protect your family. I think everybody gets that. They accept that. Let's be honest. In this country, as much as we respect the Second Amendment, though, there's going to be most Americans are not yet at the point where they want to be carrying around a gun.
Right.
I don't think. I mean, I don't think. Not when you have small kids.
Yeah.
Not on you. I think it, you know, can get different depending on how you're raised around them and all of that. Yeah. But, you know, and then for a lot of our listeners, they just can't do it because it's they will go to jail if they do it.
Yeah. All right. Second of all.
All right. Let's go to Brian, who's calling in Idaho on line one.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, so I'll try and be quick. So we teach a church security class every month at our church for free for other churches in the area. We're a very small church, just like the one that, you know, this all happened at, you know, outside of Boise. And we have a very, you know, in-depth security plan, you know, and it doesn't cost us anything. You know, we use, obviously, I'm not going to go into it on the radio for obvious reasons, but and then the other thing that people don't know about, or most people don't know about, is FEMA and Homeland Security both have departments dedicated to church security. And you can get a lot of free resources from them. We use a lot of their stuff to teach our classes and stuff. And, I mean, we had somebody already reach out to us, hey, are you doing class this month, you know, because of the shooting? And it's like, yeah, we've been having a class for months and we can't get churches to go to it because they have this attitude like, well, we're church, it's going to be fine. It's like, no, it's not fine. You need to have a plan.
Well, I think, look, you talked about a plan. Wes has talked about a plan. We've all talked about a plan. But Logan said something earlier. Now you, as a parent, you're having to know there has to be a plan. It's not an option anymore.
Right. No, you're going out with that. I mean, you mentioned always go back to the movie theaters because that's kind of a little bit where this started for, I think, a lot of parents taking their kids is when the first shooting started happening, the first, you know, the Batman film. You know, that sort of was a light bulb for a lot of people. And now you see that the movie theaters have taken part where every time you're in a movie, someone comes in with a red wand, looks through. And I'll be honest, I jump every time they come through, and it's the staff.
You know, that's a problem. That is a problem with society. The staff who's there to protect you, you also feel uncomfortable with. You know, we're not used to this yet in society. And I think Jordan is right in the fact that we're going to have to answer these questions. We're going to have to start talking about
this.
You
got to have a conversation.
Because if not, if your head's in the sand and you're like, I'm sorry, no laws, you know, go crazy, then you're just not going to be able to continue on this path.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to get worse and worse.
Yeah, I know. I say in my mind mentally now, especially as a parent, I have an aversion to large events. That being said, then I said that to my wife even then. She said right back that she's like, we were just in Chicago on the street, you know, with our 18th. Right. I mean, it's like, there can't get any larger events than being in one of the largest cities in the country. Yeah. So it's
that's
almost
a normal
like
reaction.
The mentality of, but it's also the confinement versus the ability to move.
Right, exactly.
Churches, like movie theaters,
they had nowhere
you're
to go.
Back,
nowhere to go.
Your head is facing a screen.
I mean,
a
think about what he did. Came in and
like the concert in Las Vegas on a small scale.
Yeah.
Your head is facing one way and the shooter is coming from somewhere else.
Yeah, not such a smaller scale though. I mean,
that is what is so.
Percentages were horrible. Yeah. Higher there. All right, let's take another call if we can, Logan.
Yeah, Steve's on line six.
Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Yes, quick comment and question. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I live in Maryland, and in Maryland, they have a law where if you want to buy a handgun, even from a private party, you have to have that handgun shipped to a dealer so they can go through all the background checks. So that might be, you know, a
solution. Well, that's one of the things. Again, I don't think that infringes on the Second Amendment. I think that's a logical thing to find out, because the one thing, Wes, I keep asking is, this guy now, he was discharged for bad conduct. Is that a dishonorable discharge?
Yes, it is.
Same thing.
It's called a bad conduct discharge in the UCMJ, but it's a dishonorable discharge in civilian parlance. Yeah.
So, all right, let's go. We got to try to get another
call.
We'll
get one more call. We'll wrap it up. Let's go to John in Jacksonville, Oregon, on line four. You're on
the air. John, go ahead.
Hi, Jay. Just want to make a quick comment. I think what this all boils down to is not whether or not we carry guns. What it all boils down to is that we live in a godless culture, and the constituency and a majority of people, and you can see it everywhere, they just do not value life. They don't value the life of others. They don't value the life of their own lives. And so I think the answer to this question is, number one, getting our culture to realize that life has a value. We see this issue with abortion. We see it in every facet of our lives. And so if that means these folks who again are godless, they need to be put in a position where they have to evaluate whether or not they are literally willing to lose their life.
Let me just say, though, I mean, we have suicidal people in our country, and it harms their families, it harms them, but they don't go out and carry out attacks before they take their own life. We have violent criminals who sometimes kill people in their criminal spree, but they are not there really. That's the incidental to the crime they're trying to commit. We live in the most prosperous country in the world. We don't have the majority of our citizens living in slums with nothing to live for. So life shouldn't be meaningless. I'm not sure I could accept that for a lot of people who live in the third world places. I've been in India where you could feel that on the faces of the kids. You can feel that on the face of the kids in Kenya and in some of the slums there, or Zimbabwe, where we've done work. But, you know, in America, even our poorest communities, it doesn't look like that. And that's not where this is happening.
No.
It's not happening from the poorest kids. It's happening from suburban America that is doing this.
All right. Well, if you want to keep listening to this show or get more information, go to ACLJ.org. We have everything there. You can sign up or email us. Make sure you follow us on social media. Download the ACLJ app. You can find all that information again at ACLJ.org. We'll continue this discussion, and you can continue posting comments. And we'll talk to you tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.